You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Oh, wow. It's already that time again. The air is crisp. The pumpkins are blossoming. The leaves are falling. You smell that? It smells like Sextember. What year of Sextember is it? You might be asking, how many times have we done it? Three times. That's right, baby. This is Sextember 3, Ménage à Trois. So lube up, sit back, and listen. Music.
I feel very uncomfortable.
Each year it gets worse.
Thought to be hanged and burnt over a basket of living cats.
Welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I'm uncomfortable.
And Erica.
I've never been more comfortable. Yikes. I take it all back. I'm also uncomfortable.
Thank you.
And welcome to Sextember 3, Ménage à Trois, where we talk about all the sexy movies released by New World Pictures, because there's nothing more comfortable than two brothers and one of their wives talking about sexy movies. And don't worry, everybody, because New World has released enough sexy movies for us to do Sextember for the next 10 years.
Yay! Oh, wait. We?
We should say two. If you want to catch up on all of our former Sextember episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's how you can check out all of our...
If this is your first episode, it's not a porn site, we promise.
No,
Other, we talk about other genres.
Yes, that's right. We have all sorts of other genres that we talk about, including we just finished Ha Ha August 2. We did action movies, sci-fi, all sorts of stuff there. You can catch up all those episodes at our website. Plus, if you want to support the show, give us a 5-star review. That would really help people find and discover the show and spread the love. But in the meantime, it's time to dive in to our first Sextember 3 Ménage à Trois selection, 1984's They're Playing with Fire.
In Playing with Fire, a young man is seduced by a beautiful older woman who gradually draws him into a labyrinth of mystery and terror.
What do you do when the only sound is the beat of your heart?
Tell your husband, that asshole, to get off my case, or I'm going straight to the cops.
He is dazzled by the erotic intensity of their unexpected affair, but he is also increasingly frightened.
But the feeling's so strong.
We didn't want them to be killed.
And no, you shouldn't stay.
Death and sex are a potent combination.
Come on out, boy.
Paranoia is common.
Whatever her motives for bewitching him, whatever his desire to escape, murder and madness bind them together as they move closer and closer to the horrifying truth.
That's right. 1984's They're Playing with Fire. Brought to you by Campus Pub.
Yes.
Where you can enjoy the best live entertainment campus has to offer. Dine with your friends, or even your professors. and their groundskeepers as you enjoy the finest mustard and anchovy pizzas on campus.
Ugh, yep.
And if you're worried someone is going to call for you while you're at campus pub, not to worry. Our bartender is very discreet. See you at the campus pub. See you tonight.
Campus pub.
Campus pub. Everyone wants to go there.
I did not have a campus pub at my college, so this was an alien.
I did.
Okay. Really? Wow.
But people rarely went. There were so many other options around the school that going to that pub was like, I mean, if you had nothing else to do or you were somehow incapable of leaving the campus, you would go. But
okay.
The only time I think I went was, in fact, I know, was my accounting teacher said that if everyone got at least a B in the class, he would take the entire class to campus pub and buy everybody beer.
Wow.
And we all got B's and above. So he took us to campus pub and bought us all beer, which I really think was a ruse.
Was it called campus pub?
No, it wasn't, but it was. But I think it was more a ruse for him to just drink beer.
Sure, of course.
Than really buy us beer. But I remember the night vividly because one of the people in the class was an A&R person. Like, I had an internship as an A&R person for a record label. And she was passing out CDs of the Dave Matthews Band.
Mm.
And I thought, Dave Matthews Band? That's never going to fly. That's a fucking horrible name. There's no way they're going to hit it big.
Whatever happened to them?
Boy, what? I was very
Where
wrong.
Where are they?
Very,
what are they
very wrong.
Up to? Are they still singing songs? DMB?
Is this your Jiminy Glick that you're going into right now?
You seem to have a lot of talent. But you don't make a lot of recent songs. What's up with that?
So the album.
Did not intend for this to go in this direction. Did not intend. This movie is directed by Howard Avedis, who had just directed Mortuary with a young Bill Paxton. Avedis co-wrote the movie with his wife and producing partner, Marlene Schmidt. And they had worked together since even 1974's The Teacher, which is about a young student who falls in love with his teacher. Does that sound familiar to anyone?
Huh.
It does. Well, it does.
Well, they've got a genre that they like.
Did I watch this movie to see how similar it was? I did.
Uh-oh.
And it actually, outside of them using dialogue from one scene almost exactly, it was still pretty different.
Hmm. But, really?
Yeah.
I mean, how different?
I mean, in terms of this one was a younger student, like a high school student coming out, and he was just like before he went to college and he falls in love with his teacher. There is a little bit more of like the community sort of being not into it, which makes a lot more sense considering the age. And there is a danger element, but it's different. Like the guy witnesses a murder of like his or an accidental death of his friend in the very beginning. And then that guy's brother like wants to take him down. So that's what the whole movie is. And then he's in this relationship with his teacher. So it's a little bit different, but their very first meeting where she says, "You don't like me, give me a kiss." And then he kisses her on the cheek. All that is from The Teacher. It's all the exact same dialogue.
That's surprising. And it makes me wonder, like, how sexy were the teachers that Howard and Marlene had? My God, I can't think of a single teacher that I had that I wanted to smooch on, let alone sleep with. Like, my God, growing up, did they both just have like extremely sexy teachers in their lives?
Well, the teacher in The Teacher was 28, so there's only 10 years between them. But it was still like, there's no hidden motive for the teacher in The Teacher. That is just like, you know, that
one's just yucky.
That's just like, she's just into this kid.
Ugh.
And so, which by the way, was played by Angel Tompkins from The Bees.
The Bees!
released by New World Pictures. But this movie, the teacher is played by Sybil Danning from New World's Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yeah.
Which kickstarted her B-movie career. She did a bunch of movies like in Italy and stuff, but this really kickstarted her American B-movie career. After which she starred in Cannon's Hercules and Seven Magnificent Gladiators. She had appeared in a Playboy pictorial in August 1983, which she says on her interview in the Blu-ray that that is how she got the part, or that's why they offered her the part in this, which is weird. I wonder why.
I can think of two reasons.
I can think of a third, just to throw in something
maybe
extra.
She said, I would love to play a college professor in the Playboy interview. We don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she did tell the Orlando Sentinel about her pictorial. She said this: I've had letters where women say, if you're such a strong and independent woman, why do you have to take your clothes off? But I feel that women can be strong, can be very independent, and be sexy too. There's not a woman alive who doesn't want to be sexy.
Also, if I looked like her from the neck down, I would never have clothes on, ever. I would be at the grocery store like, what? What? Drink it up. Drink it in. You're not thirsty anymore.
Hey, eyes up. Eyes up. Yeah. No, my eyes are
down.
Up here.
Eyes down. Don't look me. If somebody was looking me in the eye, I'd be like, how dare you?
What's
look
wrong
down.
With her face?
I'm imagining I have my own face. Imagine my face on her body. So I'm saying, look down. Sorry.
Hot body, but a real butterface.
I'm sorry.
Dear Lord.
I meant in this scenario, I have her face. So.
Got it.
Or no, wait.
No.
I have
you
her
have
body.
Your face.
I have my face. Body. Yeah. Because
yeah.
We basically both have the same hair already. So I'm good.
Yes.
I just need. You
so,
know.
Sybil, she wants your body, not your face. Take
but
that
also,
as you will.
But
take
also
that however
your body
you like.
In a sexy way. Also, I feel strong. I don't know. This really got off the rails. Oh, boy.
So I just want to say that I went into this movie. I hadn't seen this movie before. And I went into this movie thinking that it was a comedy.
Same.
Like My Tutor and Private Lessons. And I was like, oh, this is going to be one of those raunchy comedies.
Yep.
And boy, was I surprised.
Whoops.
That it is.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
at all.
Ew.
Yeah.
No, it is not. It nope. is, but it is a lot of other things.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
plenty of other
it's
things.
A bunch of other
it's
stuff.
It's everything else.
Yeah, it's almost. Yeah, almost.
Yeah, it's a thriller. It's action packed. It's sexy.
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery. There's romance. It's there's a dog who's a star. I don't know. There's a lot. There's an animal star.
There's an animal star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a boat. There's a
and
lot.
If all this sounds intriguing to you, here's where you can watch They're Playing With Fire. It's on Tubi.
Tubi.
It is on Plex, or it is on a Blu-ray from Kino Lorber, which I don't know if it is in print anymore.
Hmm.
I don't think it is, but they do have a Blu-ray if you want to search around eBay and see somebody who's selling it. And now it's time to talk about what this movie is about. Mark. We've sort of danced around it, but what is They're Playing With Fire about?
They're Playing With Fire is about the fact that owning a yacht is overrated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first, they're expensive, okay?
Yep.
And everyone knows that, and, you know, that's fine. But, like, once you get one, then you have to pay for a slip in order to dock it. And I get it. There are like tax advantages to living on a boat, but you're not going to get any of those tax advantages if you also own a house. And I also realize, you know, you own a yacht, you can cruise the seven seas in your yacht, but owning a yacht takes a ton of work because the thing that it is made to cruise on is consistently trying to destroy it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Every minute of every day. So you have to constantly spray it down.
Mm-hmm.
You have to constantly wash it. There's a lot of shellacking that needs to take place.
We
if
know about that.
Wood,
mm-hmm. They do address that element of it.
Yeah. Thankfully.
And, you know.
Yeah, thank God.
That's what grounded it.
It is. It's what made me go, oh, I get this movie. This
also
speaking to me.
They don't have a lot of money because they are always dry docked. For them with this thing, they never take it out. So seemingly
they
have no staff for this yacht.
No, they
exactly.
don't.
Exactly. So they're having to do all the cleaning and the shellacking. And even the word shellac, by the way.
Yeah.
derives a perpetual negative connotation. I mean, nobody wants to shellac anything. Shellacking wood is a pain in the ass. You got to sand it. Then you got to put the shellac on it. And if you're not in a well-ventilated room, it's going to give you like a horrible headache.
I don't think he was sanding it beforehand. I don't know about you guys. No, but he went right to shellacking. I don't think he did a single bit of sanding.
So he's locking in salty air, probably moisture.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bad news. Well,
that's what you get when you hire a gas station attendant to shellac your boat, you know.
And student. Let's be fair. He's got multiple jobs. But my point is, the word shellacked is a bad word. I mean,
yeah.
When someone says, oh, our team got shellacked, that's a terrible word. Even the band Shellac didn't hold up against like Unwound and Jawbox.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, shellacking is never a good thing. And don't get me started on yacht clubs.
I feel like
I've been to a couple yacht clubs.
Oh, Humble Brag.
The one that they drive by in this movie.
Oh, and humble brag.
The dining and meeting rooms at a yacht club are on par, pardon the pun, with community golf courses.
Okay.
That may be a bigger indictment on community golf courses. Because like the yachts that are outside of the yacht club, the ocean, the sea air, the sea water is trying to destroy the yacht club 365 days a year. So, again, you have to constantly paint the yacht club, constantly, which means the inside and the outside of the yacht club end up looking like the Zillow equivalent of 1940s charm. Bring your elbow grease and earn some sweat equity. In other words, they're not that great. Join a golf club. They're better. And you don't have to worry about a yacht because, as I said at the top, owning a yacht is overrated.
Okay. Jeez, welcome to Mark's TED Talk.
It's yacht talk.
Yeah, I'm just saying. It's not.
His yachtock. All right, Erica, what is this movie about?
I hear you, Mark. I didn't see all the points that you raised, but something that stood out to me about what this movie is about is that just because someone's a college professor doesn't mean they're intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are easier ways to get inheritance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's easier ways. You're a fucking college professor. You know, there's got to be an easier way than seducing a student and luring him into a murder, tangling him up in that. There's got to be an easier way. That's my takeaway. Just because someone's a professor doesn't mean they're smart.
That's true.
It also doesn't mean they're ugly and are gross looking. It might also mean that they're actually very, very attractive.
From the neck down.
Yeah. Well, from the top of the head down. But I just, in that instance, I thought it was my head, her. Oh boy. Sybil, I apologize. Let me make it up to you. I'll shellac your yacht.
Ooh, is that a euphemism? For me, this movie was just about only a psycho goes full denim.
Yep.
You have to
have lost your mind.
Go full denim like that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what Letterboxd says this movie's about, and we are on Letterboxd, so give us a follow there if you can. A married college professor decides to seduce her student.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Got it.
Whom she hired as a handyman for her yacht. No, she hired him to do a shellacking job, as
Mark shellacky man
covered.
Well, that is handy, and he is a man, so I'm going to go with Letterboxd.
He's not fixing anything. Handyman would imply that he's doing, like, you know, he's
so you're saying a handyman would change out.
He's doing finish work.
A painter is a different, like, ordering a painting company. That doesn't qualify under handyman.
Right,
or is painting a subcategory under handyman?
Well, also, that means you've hired somebody.
Wait, is that the whole letterbox?
No.
Oh.
No. We've
I was like, is that it? That's the all rails. They got out of this? Them and Mark, I guess.
Much like this movie, we've gone off the rails already.
Did Mark read that letterbox review?
He may have.
I'm sorry, guys.
Mark's standing up for golf conference rooms and for handymen around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You're
welcome, everyone.
The hesitant student succumbs to his buxom professor.
Buxom? Oh my God.
Yeah, that's true, though.
Did my grandma write this?
How do I say she's got big boobs? I don't want to be crass.
I want
to be crass enough to include it.
I'm a Looney Tunes character, apparently, so let me just...
But their romance is interrupted by her corrupt husband and a masked murderer.
Oh, the husband is corrupt, not her. She's fine. She has high morals.
She's completely
doing everything right.
Completely safe from all this.
Got it.
She's not
also,
involved.
Do we know that he's corrupt? They both have the same intentions.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're corrupt. I don't know
if they're
morally
corrupt,
certainly.
They're greedy.
But,
yeah, exactly. They're just greedy. They just want money. Yeah. That's all.
Look, and they just want to get that yacht out at sea. You know, I mean, come on. They've been dry docked for years.
Forever. It's time to get that yacht out there. And
technically not dry docked because you'd have to be on land, but I get
you. Oh, okay. Oops. Just docked, I guess. Sorry about that. Oh, boy. I feel like that's not the last hand smack we're going to get on this yacht.
Oh, the SemanticCast.
On this yachtic.
Well, we'll check in on the SemanticCast later, but it's apparently going great. So get in the movie, as we already mentioned, Sybil Danning's a college professor and a college professor that owns a yacht. It feels off and it's off-putting for good reason, because we're going to find out why in mere minutes of this plot. But she is instantly has her attention on her student Jay, who's played by Eric Brown, who was on Mama's Family at the time. But he had gained attention with a movie Mark mentioned up top, 1981's Private Lessons, where he played a kid who falls in love with his maid, who is played by an Emmanuel actress, Sylvia Christel. Even Sybil Danning could see the similarities. She told Jeff Kramer in 2012, she said, and it was actually, I think, kind of a, I don't want to say a ripoff, but it was just kind of a follow-up to Sylvia Christel's movies. To that end, New World agreed, because on the posters for They're Playing With Fire, the tagline was, from his French maid, he got private lessons. Now his English professor is giving him a real education.
Wow. They just went for it. They just leaned into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Private Lessons, not a New World movie.
Wow.
But no. They were just like, hey.
And a comedy.
A comedy.
Oh, about. No. Imagine you're going to see this. Like, this is going to be hilarious. And then you leave like, huh.
Imagine that was me last night.
Just you saw Private Lessons last night, or you watched this movie?
You're talking about watching this movie. Okay. I was like, I'm in for a romp. Little sexy romp. And I got this.
Yeah. I mean, also, that there's nothing more encapsulating of the 80s than a movie that is a comedy is about a 15-year-old kid who falls in love with his maid. And on the poster, it's him stepping on a bunch of stacked books in order to kiss her, which is like, oh. And it's like, no, he's 15. Ugh. Anyway, but there were a slew of these movies, as Mark was talking about, that it followed Private Lessons in the early 80s about older women and younger men, such as Homework, and then Losing It, Class, and My Tutor in 1983. And then I guess this?
Yeah.
At least up until this point, when she is interested in her student and offers him work on her yacht, it feels like, okay, this is about what the poster suggests, a sexy teacher hitting on her student. But it turns out there's a reason for Diane's interest in Jay. She and her husband need someone to help them get the inheritance from her husband's mother.
Mm-hmm. Remember when I was your student and you made love to me on the yacht? You promised to take me all over the world if I married you. They were just dreams. We never went anywhere. Your mother saw to that.
Better to be available in case they needed us.
Michael, I want us to have fun while I'm still young. I've got to get out of this town. I'm bored. Every day is the same.
You won't be around much longer.
Do what you want, Michael. But come summer, I'm leaving.
Look, I love you. And I'm not going to lose you. I promise we'll do it. We'll get the money.
Despite the sexy music there at the end, husband Michael soon stops smooching her and leaves the room for whatever reason, I guess.
I think if there's anything that I respected out of that scene, it's that she's going to wait until summer break to leave him. She's going to finish the school year, things as they are, and then summer break, she's out. She's out.
Yeah, I mean, she's committed to her craft. Mm-hmm. But also, the thing that I don't respect in this scene is saying, I promise we'll get the money is not a plan.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's not. In fact, this movie never really explains what the plan is.
No.
Or how they're going to get the inheritance.
No.
At all.
They don't have a plan is the plan.
Nobody has a plan.
They have no plan. There's so much to unpack in this small clip here. For one, Diana's bored, and it's because she does the same thing every day. She's a college professor, so she only has a few classes per semester, office hours, then summers off. If she's that bored, should she get a real 9-to-5? It'll keep you real busy. I mean,
she spends her weekends and evenings lounging on this yacht in Playa Vista. They have a beautiful large home that they keep saying is right by the marina, which... logistically, that's not possible at all.
It's not.
I recognize I'm splitting hairs here, but it's geographically, if you know that area, that's just not possible.
Right.
But still, beautiful house, summer's off, you have a yacht, you drive an RX-7. I mean, kind of seems like things are pretty fun right now, right?
She does say that her mom and her grandmother want them to move out. They're sort of looking to move them out, which... it's weird, and I can understand some boredom or some unhappiness if she is living in a big, beautiful house, but she has to live with her mother-in-law and her grandmother-in-law. Like, it might be a little bit of something there, but
not boring.
Yeah, true.
It may be infuriating, but not boring.
Right. By the way, also at this point, she's already hooked up with Jay, so I mean, she's already taking steps to get away from him. But I guess. Fair warning? Anyway.
Right. So she's found this person that, you know, the movie's trying to say, or trying to make the audience believe that they have found in Jay someone that they can pin something on. They're not clear. In fact, they're so unclear that they send Jay into the house with really no plan, but just get into the house.
Right. Yeah.
What he's going to do in there, how he's going to do it, unclear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But he does I mean, that's the power of a large bosomed teacher, right?
Buxom, some would say. Right. By the way, before we get to that, she also mentions in that scene that she hooked up with Michael when she was a student. Mm-hmm. Now she's hooking up with a student. Diane, you're just repeating the cycle. Mm-hmm. It's just repeating itself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Michael is played by Andrew Prine, whom we last saw in The Evil. You guys remember The Evil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked that one.
Yeah. He was in The Evil. But speaking of the never-ending teacher-student love affair loop, what do they want Jay for? As Mark is saying, the next day, it turns out that Jay is not into their little plan.
Hello, Jay.
Oh, hi, Professor.
He doesn't want to do it.
What do you mean? Look, Jay, it's no big deal. You just go there and make some noises after they go to bed. Scare them like you're a burglar.
So we can talk them into moving out of the house and put them in a retirement home where they're much safer and better off. You know I wouldn't get you into any trouble.
What if something happens?
Nothing's going to happen. Please, Jay. Do it for me.
All right.
Great.
He's in.
Easy.
He's in. He came in like, I am not doing this. Please, do it for me. Okay.
Nobody said that Jay was the smartest kid in the class. But two things. One, that is also not a plan. No. Okay, so he makes a bunch of noise. To what end?
What is he going to do? What's he trying to do?
And send the cops to the house?
Make them think there's a ghost in the basement? What is his plan?
Also, none of that causes anyone to rewrite a will or an estate plan. Like, that doesn't change anything.
I don't think they're aware of that, though. I don't think they're aware. The mom says at some point that she said, I'm not giving her any of my money. I've written them out. And I'm not sure they're aware of that. But it's a plot point that never comes up and is very unnecessary. But it's like... So I'm not sure. I don't know what they're aware of because I also don't know what they're up to.
Again.
Right.
Just because you're a professor doesn't mean you're smart.
And now we have two professors both being like, here's the plan. Here's a bag filled with things. Climb into the basement and then wait until dark and then, you know, make noises.
Yeah. Knock over the suit of armor that we have in the basement.
Well, that was an accident, but because he's a clumsy idiot.
Really quickly, though, have I been mispronouncing burglar this whole time?
Burglar.
Is there an extra E that I forgot?
Burglar.
Got it.
Burglar. Yeah. Burglar. Come
remember
on.
Remember that McDonald's character, the Hamburglar?
Hey. Yeah. Our favorite Phil Collins movie, Burglar. And what was he supposed to do? Why does he have a motorcycle helmet? Why does he put a helmet? It doesn't make any sense. Of course, he's found out by the family dog who barks and runs down to the basement and catches him. Mm-hmm. Also, I guess he's supposed to do it at night, but it was hilarious to me that this all happened during the day. Like, he went in late afternoon, but it's a long time to hang out in the basement.
He went in right around Jeopardy time. That's when he went in. That's the time to go in. Jeopardy's on, get in. They're not stepping away from Jeopardy.
I know we're not at final questions, but do you think the mom gave all the money to the dog in the will?
Oh, yeah.
The dog,
100%.
The only character worth a damn in the entire film.
100%.
I hope the inheritance went to that dog.
Embraced by all.
Yeah.
Because everyone loves that dog. There's no one that doesn't love that dog despite its feelings towards others.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the reasons are that he's in the basement because Mama Michael, or Michael's mama, takes out her sniper rifle.
Mm-hmm. Nah, that's just a hunting rifle.
Okay.
It's like I couldn't tell if it was a 243 or a 270, but it's just a bolt action hunting
Mark,
rifle.
Mark, you're off. You're off your game.
Yeah. Get it together, Mark. Jeez.
Jesus, Mark. We rely on you for these things.
It's September. Sharpen up.
I was just so taken back by the ownership of a yacht and the dependency on a yacht club that it really took me out of my game. So
it really did. You started writing down a whole treatise.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. The Samantha cast is going to blow up after this. And anyway, Michael's mama, she fires away at Jay as he races off into what might eventually be nighttime. And this is where the movie really turns. A person wearing a pair of white sneakers and black gloves walks down the stairs, grabs the rifle, and does the job for Diane and Michael, killing Michael's mama and grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I was like, oh, is this like an American Giallo? Because it's got Giallo vibes.
Yeah, that's true.
Black gloves.
Yes.
We don't see the killer's face.
Yeah.
And then they're trying to tell us, they're trying to tell everybody that it's somebody that it's not.
Yeah.
Right? He eventually, Jay thinks that it's Michael. Michael thinks it's Jay. Jay finds his shoes with some blood on them. And of course, Diane just explains it away. There's a scene where Diane walks into their house and she's dressed in all denim and white shoes. I mean, they're trying if this was made by Italians, holy shit.
There's a scene when Michael is trying to wipe off the stickiest blood of all time off the wall.
Right. On the mirror.
Though he knew it was there. So you're thinking, how would he know that?
Yeah.
Because he puts his hand on it and then he goes, it's blood. And it's like he's done nothing to verify that, check it. I mean,
right.
I guess
the
just
touch, the feel of blood.
He just knows by
the fluid of our lives.
He knows from the stickiness of it. He's like, well, that's blood.
Well, he's a professor, Ryan.
Right, exactly. Of psychology. He knows his blood.
He knows the touch of blood.
But Jay has even bigger problems because his old girlfriend, Cynthia, has photos of him with Diane on her yacht. Extremely well-crafted photos by someone who was definitely on the boat somehow, which leads...
Who took these?
What difference does it make?
Why are you doing this to me, Cynthia?
I want you to stop seeing her.
She has nothing to do with you and me.
Then why don't you want to be with me anymore?
Because you want to move in with me. And I told you before, I'm not ready for that, with you or with anybody.
Look, Jay, I know you're broke, and I can help you. I have plenty of money.
You want to help me, then leave me alone.
How does Jay have this much heat with the ladies?
I don't know.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he has a subdued charm.
Yeah. I guess everybody knows that story about him and the maid. So they just think that he really knows
right,
what's up.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Maybe that followed him to college.
Yeah. They have all seen Private Lessons, even if perhaps you haven't.
Yeah.
In the audience.
It could be just as simple as he has a huge donger. And everyone knows it.
Yeah. And that word is spread.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Some people are gifted.
I don't understand. It's crazy to me. I don't think they cast, I mean, I know why they cast Eric Brown, obviously, because of Private Lessons, but it's like they didn't cast him because he looks like a ladies man. No offense to the guy. I mean, from the neck down, I wish I had that body.
We'd be in the store together naked. Eyes down here, mister. Eyes down here.
Oh.
Don't you dare look at me in my eyes. You look at me in the titties like everybody else.
When Jay does...
And you look at my husband in the balls.
Right in his balls.
Right at his balls.
Small balls, but giant penis.
Maybe Jay had the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Giant dong and giant balls. I don't know. Is that the best?
That's the full package.
Yeah.
It just means, because it's a lot. It's just a lot to carry around.
It's a lot.
In those jean shorts. But
Watch out for the salad bar when you're at the store, because you don't want to accidentally just brush your balls in the jello. Or anything like that.
Or maybe you do. Maybe you do just want to just do a little dip.
Watch out.
How tall do you think he is?
I'm talking about if it's you.
Oh,
you're in the store with me.
I see.
I can't
I still have my height. I don't have his height.
Yeah,
Eric is also assuming he brought that stack of books with him so he can get in there and dip his balls in the
jello.
I can't
get too close to the salad bar because I'm nude. I'll get a pube in it. So you've got to go over there.
he always brings around that stack of books.
Right. It's his calling card.
Jay does head. He heads to the boat. He's trying to find that evidence that Michael did the killing. Diane shoots down all his theories. And then we get back to the teacher-student love plot.
Mm-hmm.
As she draws Jay in for some more awkward sex. This time on top of a dresser, which feels even more awkward. Sybil Danning has an explanation for why the love scenes look like they do. In her interview from 2012, she said, I don't know why. Maybe he was just in a very bad state of mind at that time in his life or something. But Mr. Brown, young little Mr. Brown, hated doing the sexy scenes. He didn't want to do them. He felt totally uncomfortable doing them. He did not like doing them. And I think maybe because he was so against doing it that it came across as him being shy, maybe it worked.
Yeah, I mean, he does come off as being sort of shy and you know, he's not the smartest kid. Which also speaks to, you know, you don't have to be the smartest kid to go to college either.
True.
But
true.
But him being shy or maybe not wanting to do it plays off, at least to me, it played it off like he is inexperienced and now he's with this, you know, he's definitely batting out of his league and he knows it.
Sure.
In fact, the first sex scene, she gets on top of him and he just won't stop talking. And I felt like... Yeah, I'd be in that same position of like, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to keep talking because I'm way out of my element right now.
But most of the time, it's just him kind of hugging her and she does all of the like movement and or he lays on top of her. Just she kind of sells it while he just lays there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she also says this. She said, you know, I just have to say that the good thing is that I was into the role because I think maybe not every actress could have felt good about doing that because when you have a partner that is totally not into it, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could translate that to everyday walk of life too.
It's true. In general.
Yeah. When the partner's not into it.
When you're with someone else who is not into you in any capacity, whether it just be
right.
You and a neighbor, or you and a coworker.
I don't
want to
talk through this.
I don't mean in a sexy way. I just mean like in general, like anything that you.
No, I was meaning in a sexy way.
I didn't mean that. Okay. Well, we're here. It's Sextember. We gotta embrace it. We have to embrace it. We're talking about sex, guys. We're talking about sex. With all the maturity of grown adults talking about sex.
Whoever murdered your mother and grandmother wants Jay out of the way, too.
You're insinuating I killed my mother.
It could be you, or you put someone up to it.
How do I know it's not you? You got rid of the old ladies. Now you got to get rid of the kid because he's the only witness. And I'm next. You got it all planned, every move.
It's absurd.
Don't try to con me, Diane. I know you. You want that money.
Not enough to commit murder.
So anyway, it goes back and forth for a while between Jay and Michael, basically trying to lay blame on the other. This goes on for a while until Diane and Michael finally break up. Maybe because George, the groundskeeper, spilled the beans on Diane and Jay. He sees them while he's walking through campus, and then he hangs out with Michael in the campus pub. Is George taking an extension class? Why is he on campus that much? He's really...
Well, campus pub, anyone can go. You know, they don't charge you.
He's the groundskeeper for his mom. Like, right.
Open to the public, I guess.
This movie also posits a world where the house, the yacht, and the college are all within walking distance of each other.
Yeah.
They're all next door, pretty much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll go so far as maybe their house is on the other end of the cul-de-sac.
Right. But I appreciate, too, that before they break up, Michael and Diane walk down the street in public just having a regular old conversation about the murder of his mom, his grandmother.
Right.
Yeah.
About the affair that she's been having, about how they haven't had sex in a year.
Yeah.
I mean, why save that for the closed quarters of your own home or the yacht, for that matter? Just talk about it in public.
Yeah, why not? Might as well.
Yep.
Well, Jay does that right away when he comes in and he's upset with Michael after, you know, Michael's blaming him for his mother's death. And he comes into her office and is like, you know, I'm going to go to the cops. And she's like, whoa, 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 and closes the door. And I'm like, 100%. Everyone in the hallway just heard him say that. Like, 1,000%.
Right. Yeah.
There's no one that never heard that. It's so dead quiet in that office.
Yeah.
No one did not hear that.
No, everyone heard it.
Everyone's like, what? He's going to the cops. You go to the cops about what? Like, they're all in on it. So their time is short, whether they know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Diane heads over to Jay's for another steamy, put your body on top of me while we have sex.
In his very spacious apartment, especially for a college student.
Huge. It's like a studio but they don't have their own rooms. They just have two beds in the
studio. It's like they took four studios and put them together and forgot to put walls up. It is 1,600 square feet that he's sharing with one other guy.
Yeah. This is the 80s. I mean, this is what the 80s were like.
Yeah, I guess so.
Just stacks of books all over the place so he can reach anything.
just a bowl of Jell-O sort of sitting a little high up in the middle of the living room.
It's mad. His roommate really wants to take it out on him. He can just kick over some of the stacks around the apartment.
Right.
See you be able to climb up now. Then Michael shows up to the apartment where I'm surprised that Diane even agreed to go to. But anyway, they show up and he just, I guess he's going to ruin it. So Diane and Jay, they say, okay, let's get out of here. And they sneak off to the yacht where Michael will never look. Oh, no, he went there immediately. And there he is.
That's because in this movie, there are four places anyone goes.
Four locations.
It's Jay's apartment, the yacht, the house, and campus pub.
That's it. They had one day to shoot in the offices, too. They had, like, the Yeah, the professor's office.
There is the college, so there's the fifth. But
yeah, but that's it. That is it. So Michael takes out his gun, and he aims at Jay and Diane, but he can't do it. Luckily, his mercy is rewarded when the killer steps out and stabs him.
Mm-hmm.
Jay and Diane then chase the killer back to the house because, again, they're right at the... They're going from the docks to the house because they're just right next door to each other.
I just figured they've been doing some marathon training and they're like, hey, want to knock out an 18? We can head back to the house. Why take the RX-7? Just run it out.
I need to keep the training going.
Exactly.
When we're done with this, I'm going to need to throw on another 6. That's where I'm at on my training.
I didn't get my longy in this week, so I got to get it in now.
Yeah. Before Jay and Diane get back to the house, we learn who the killer is. And I have to say, as I kind of said it before, I know Howard Avedis is not Italian. I think he's actually from Iraq originally. But when the killer starts using his baby voice, it just feels like Howard knows what he's doing and he knows what's going on.
Mother told me that if you and Michael found out about me, you'd want to get rid of me because you want the money. So I got rid of Michael. And now... I'm going to get rid of you.
Come on, Martin, open up the door.
Arnold, I promise to close the door.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That happens in this movie. The killer has them trapped in the attic.
Which I just really quickly, though, that definitely had, to your point, that had some Dario Argento's Sleepless vibes to it as well. I mean, he's not quacking, but New York Ripper.
Of course.
Why are you making that noise? That's not necessary at all.
Nope. But I feel like Howard saw some of these movies and he was inspired.
Yeah.
The killer has them trapped in the attic, but then immediately decides to come upstairs to investigate anyway. So it doesn't make any sense. But anyway, why bother to trap them? Anyway, he does. So, and then he brings a literal knife to a gunfight as he sneaks up behind them and Jay just shoots him. So,
right.
Hooray! Because we can't go to another location. We have the house. We have the attic.
We have exhausted.
We can't. What are we gonna do? Go back to campus pub and have a showdown? We can't do it there. Anyway, in the final moments of the movie, we see Diane and Jay stay together, which is what we all wanted. Were we invested in them?
Even want to be with her long term?
What does she want to be with him? I don't know.
Does he have cash to take her around the world? Right. I don't know.
She has all the money, and I guess she feels he saved her life because he's the one that shoots the killer. So she feels indebted to him. So I'm like, well, that trip to Hawaii is going to get awkward pretty quick. When she's like, I don't know. I kind of want to do my own thing tonight. I'm kind of not feeling this, but I invited you.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's that time.
Oh. It's time for things we love. You want to talk to me about things we hate?
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we love and things we hated about their playing with fire. Mark, what did you love?
I loved how douchey Michael is throughout this movie. I think that was Andrew Prine. Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he plays this role perfectly. He's not too over the top, but he's always just kind of an asshole, and you really do question, like, I mean, he obviously has ulterior motives. They are probably not good. He's probably untrustworthy, and he plays it perfectly without winking at all or getting too over the top. I thought he just did a really good job. The whole time I thought, this must be a red herring, but he's doing a great job of convincing the audience that absolutely he could be a suspect, and he should be a suspect.
He also loves to get in bed with a glass of scotch.
I mean, who doesn't?
Which I was like, it me.
I feel seen.
I mean, he had a little too much ice in there, but you yeah, know, potato, right, potato.
Yeah, but still, he gets in bed like, fuck this. Which I'm like, yeah, I feel that. I feel that every night. Anyway, Erica, what did you love?
I love the dog. Mm. Oh, man, that dog. Yeah. Just...
It's a sweet little dog.
Oh, mm-hmm. I thought the dog was great. It was a nice, I guess, twist. I don't know. Not a twist, but I was surprised at how much the dog was featured.
Mm-hmm.
The dog is poorly tied up at one point, I guess, by Martin, where he kind of ties... He takes a piece of fabric and ties the mouth shut, and
the tie muzzle.
Loosely puts ropes around its body while it's sitting on a chair.
So loose that even Jay gets the dog free in seconds.
Yeah.
And you know that would have been, if you had actually done the job right and really tied that dog up, that would have taken Jay forever.
Yeah. And I feel like the dog is such a good dog. It knew it could shake those ropes off, but mm-hmm. it was like, well, you put me on the chair and loosely tied me up, so I'll wait.
Yep. Clearly, I need to be here.
Yeah.
Well, I love the theme song. It's been a while since we had a theme song. This is clearly going to be a worldly nominee. There's no doubt about it.
What do you do when the only sound is the beat of your heart tearing you apart with its pound?
Playing with Fire, performed by Arnetti Walker, and music and lyrics by John Kakavas. John Kakavas did the score, and Bonnie Becker. It has a kind of a, not quite there, but all like a James Bondian kind of, has like James Bondian hopes as a song. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Playing with Fire, of course, being the original title. That was what the movie was going to be called. And then they put on There. Playing with Fire.
So but different.
If there was a James Bond movie where James Bond was seduced by his teacher.
Right, right.
I'd be into it. I'd be into seeing where that goes.
A young Bond.
And I'm not
Bond.
Talking Moneypenny. I'm talking like he's just, yeah, he's a young Bond. He's in college. And he just gets seduced by a teacher and gets wrapped up in some mystery. This could be a Bond film in
him
in
and
the
MI6 school. I clearly know a lot about it. I'm sorry to brag with all my acumen about the spy network of the UK. But anyway, let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I hated that when Jay goes back to the house and he's looking for evidence, like something else is going on here, he finds in 5 minutes an incredible amount of shit on them, including a gun in a nightstand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look, I've been looking for an American Express card in my house for weeks and I can't find it. And then he finds everything in
a
5 minutes.
The gun, bloody shoes, instantly.
Mm-hmm.
I need him to come to my house and help me out and find some stuff.
And it's not like he looks in some places where he finds nothing. He looks in only the places where he finds something.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. He's like one of those guys that is looking for water and has the little like stick thing.
Divining rod. Yeah.
The divining rod. He's like a walking divining rod for crime evidence.
Wait, I'm sorry. Is this something that you loved or hated? I'm confused.
I hate that I can't find my American Express card.
Okay. Got you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Erica, what did you hate?
I hated the sort of, I hate to call it a subplot, but I felt like the whole thing of seeing his friends and like, oh, his friends are out
and they show up
at the professor's family home and now they're peeing in the garden and they're off to the campus. Like, it just, I don't know. There wasn't enough there, but then there was also simultaneously too much.
Yes.
So no, I didn't like any of the involvement of the friends. It was just underdeveloped, but then there were too many scenes with them that were meaningless.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No, I totally
wasn't into the friends.
I totally agree. And to that end, there's a moment when his particular friend Glenn, who is the guy who is from Friday the 13th Part 5. But he does take that leak outside of the house, and the killer's right there. And so his other friends are about to drive away, like leaving him. And you're like, okay, here comes the killer, going to get him. And then he like just stops and then like runs oblivious to the killer and runs over and jumps in. I'm like, just kill him. What are we doing?
Like, you don't feel like he's in any real peril.
Why are these kids even here?
Yeah.
Right. In fact, you don't feel like he's in any real apparel. Apparel.
He's in some clothes. He is wearing clothes.
He is in apparel.
In any peril.
Yeah.
Because also the killer is just sort of creepily hiding behind a Roman statue.
Mm-hmm.
He's
yeah.
just standing behind mm-hmm. a statue, which is just, if he did notice him, if it was me and I was peeing, I wouldn't be scared. I would just be wondering, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, behind Creeper? That statue. Yes, he was in Friday the 13th Part 5, but he also directed Evil Laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Which is basically a Friday the 13th ripoff.
Yes, which
Are you sure it's not a Friday the 13th follow-up?
Which Eric no. Brown was the assistant director.
Really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Huh. Yeah, he's interviewed on the Vinegar Syndrome disc in their like almost feature-length documentary. Talks about the movie, and he mentions they're playing with fire very briefly, only to say that it's a bad horror movie, which I'm like, horror movie?
Huh.
Okay.
Oh. Add it to the list.
Also bad? Yeah, I just thought those friends, again, why they're easy marks. Two of the other friends, the ones that are driving off, I don't even know who they are. None of us know who they are.
Yeah.
He's got the one kid who loves pizzas, and then his ex-girlfriend, and then there's two other ancillary friends.
Right.
They just seem like, once we step into horror territory, it's like, we'll kill them off. We mm-hmm. don't even, we barely know anything about them. But they actually live through the whole film.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, why? I totally agree. Let's switch to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was the end of the movie where Diane finds Jay working at the gas station and says that they're going to go to Hawaii and she needs a ride. And he says, my car, oh, it's in the shop. And she says, oh, I bought you this Ferrari. And I'm just thinking, like, you guys like should be in jail for manslaughter charges yeah. right now. I mean, yep. I get it. You ultimately didn't do it, but the cops are going to be like, we have a lot to put together. And you did kill all these people, or at least this person. So we're going to have to detain you until we figure this whole thing out.
Yeah.
But no, not in this world, not in they're playing with fire world. If you have just cause, if you're like, hey, this person had a knife, I shot him. The cops are like, it's a closed case for me.
Yeah.
And these other bodies, we didn't do it. Pah. Okay. Oh. Well,
yeah, no, cool. That was him. And also this guy is my roommate. But anyway, we're going to go to Hawaii. No big deal.
And you didn't know about this at all? No, I never told me anything.
No clue.
Oh, all right.
No clue. We just lived together in close believable. Proximity in a giant studio. But
how do you guys know each other? She's my teacher.
Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Nothing suspicious here, guys. Take see you later.
I kind of wish that scene was in the movie.
I guess his partner goes up and says, do you want to deal with all this paperwork? Let's just close the file. Gotcha. We're done. My favorite scene. We didn't go to your favorite scene. Erica, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene, I touched on a little bit, is one where the dog is tied up and then easily untied.
Yes.
And then also when we see Martin's crazy paintings. I'm unstable. I make crazy paintings and talk like a baby. Like,
he's channeling all that anger into art, though. You got to give him credit.
Yeah. I mean, he could have had a real life out there, but mom and grandma didn't want it. So, you know.
Could have also been a heroin addict. So, I mean, I figure he picked kind of the best role, you know.
Murderer.
Yeah. Murderer. Much better.
I was going with Painter, but yeah. You're right.
Up until the point of him becoming a murderer, yeah, he was doing right.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite scene is when the killer steps out to kill Jay's ex-girlfriend dressed like Santa Claus.
Oh,
it's
yes.
The only scene where he's dressed as Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And it's, why is he dressed like Santa Claus?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not cool that he, you know, kills this girl, but it's like, what is this scene?
Yeah.
It's the only scene. Is this a Christmas movie now? There's no mention of Christmas.
Maybe.
That it's wild. In a movie with a lot of wild swings that you're just like, what?
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. I had forgotten about that. That was
amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening here? Let's get into some final questions. Here are our final questions for They're Playing With Fire. How hot is the water in the shower at their house that Sybil Danny just steps right into it? She just turns on the water. She steps in the shower, turns the water on. And it's just like, I'm right in the water. I'm like, I mean,
tankless, baby. Tankless yacht.
I was going to ask, do you guys turn on the shower and wait a bit and get
yes,
in?
Yes, like any human being.
Or do you just enjoy a 3-minute blast of cold water until it heats up?
Yeah. Or does her skin, like, she has no feeling? Like, she
it's
can't
possible.
Tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, she can't
yeah.
tell temperature.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
Hot or cold, it doesn't matter. Why did Jimbo let him get his job back at the gas station?
Beggars can't be choosers. He's just got that mm-hmm. thing, too. He came back and he was like, ah, shit. Oh, yeah, you're rehired, you hot piece of ass.
Jay has too much heat. I don't understand.
Too much heat.
I don't get it. Another Jimbo question. Does he ever get a hat that fits his head?
Nope. No.
No, they don't sell them that way.
That's
no.
his merch. It's your merch, dude.
Yeah.
No one is buying mm-hmm. that
Some
merch.
Some of
but
us
you.
Have weird giant heads. You know this. You married a mega mind, all right? I've got a giant noggin.
I feel like his is unusually small, where even kid size is too small, adult size is way too big.
Yeah.
And he's like, ugh, I guess I just can't wear hats.
Damn this petite. Skull of mine.
Well, I still gotta wear a hat because that's what guys at gas stations do. Sybil Danny was teaching the kids about Macbeth, centering on murdering for ambition. What is her read on the material by the end of the movie? Positive, negative?
Oh, positive, because she bought a Ferrari and is heading off to Hawaii.
I guess positive.
Yeah. Dare say
also,
this might
assume,
be her favorite play.
Yeah.
I guess summer was right around the corner because she immediately is ready to take off. So
I guess. Yeah. When she said, I'm leaving in the summer, that's like right. That's 2 days
away.
That was like
next weekend.
Yeah.
She meant it.
She did not
tell the
kids.
They were during finals week during this movie.
Mm-hmm.
She did not mention to the kids when she let them go from her class that finals are this week.
Yeah.
Really turning those papers. Like it's happening. She's just like, see you next time. It's like, well, next time's our final.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
All right. You know, we talked about the dogs, but but we all own dogs. So do we all do what cool dog owners do and feed the dog on top of the kitchen island?
Shit. I should have said that is my favorite scene. I remember freaking out when we Oh shit, that I take it back. That's my favorite scene. Not when the dog is tied up, but when the dog is fed on top of the island. Oh,
can't say
crazy.
I've done that. I cannot say I've done that.
No,
so,
no.
That's a new one for me.
Yeah.
No. Lastly, I read this review which says this about the movie, but the movie didn't get great reviews. But here's what it says. The movie is by New World Pictures, the old Roger Corman company, which has been bought by new management. The new guys have a lot to learn. What makes B-movies work is basic vulgar energy. The New World Pictures seems to be intent on making nice little films in which they just throw in some sex and violence just because you're supposed to do it. Agree? Disagree?
It kind of felt like the whole movie was built around the sex and violence.
Yeah. I mean, this one feels like that. It wasn't just something they just tossed in there as well.
Mm-mm. There wasn't a different plot and then suddenly people having sex and then back to the plot.
It was just them bringing like a student and teacher, and they're like, what if the student teacher hooked up? Let's just have them do that too. Like, what a. Yeah.
But I will agree with the original premise that they had a lot to learn.
They did. They did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I take it as a compliment. They called it a nice little film.
They did.
I think we're misinterpreting it. It's a nice little film.
Yeah, okay. That's true. Let's get into some research. This was shot in September 1983 on a reported budget of $2 million, which seems really high. Yeah. I'm not sure about that. I got this from the AFI, and they said it's $2 million, but I don't know. I feel like that's...
How much it costs to rent that yacht.
I don't know, but who knows? Apparently, it did perform well when it did go to theaters in terms of at least outperforming other new independent releases, grossing $251,000, $988 at 89 screens during its opening weekend. Not a lot of money, but only 89 screens. Seems like
they're short about $1.7 million.
Yes, they still are.
I mean, I'm no mathematician. But that's
opening weekend, and only it's not a big release. 89 screens is not much. So, as New World would go on, they did a lot of like regional screenings of movies, and then just put them out on video. Seems like that's kind of their intent here, even though, as we'll get to in a second, New World Video didn't exist at this point. Mm-hmm. This was shot by Gary Graver, who also shot Death's Port, Smokey Bites the Dust, but also the aforementioned teacher-student movie Homework, as well as Howard Avedis' previous film Mortuary. And he also shot a small section of Beverly Hills Vamp that featured his wife, Jillian Kessner, who is the star of New World's Firecracker, which we talked about earlier in the summer when we were all getting ready to leave. This movie opens in April 1984, including in L.A. in late April. And as I said, it does not get good reviews, particularly from Sybil Danning all these years later in 2012. She said, quote, "Well, I think it's not a great movie, but I think it worked. It had good production values and it plays to the fantasy of young men."
Okay. Yeah, I'll give her that.
Yeah, fair enough. It does eventually go out to video in December 1984, so later that year. Just around the corner in 1985, they're going to start New World Video. But at the time it comes out, New World is also releasing, it looks like, Bad Manners as well. Hambone and Hilly.
Okay.
The Highest Honor. That's things coming from New World, but... New releases at that point in time, Police Academy, The Neverending Story. Also, High Point, New World's High Point. Mm. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So, a lot of competition.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, so one last thing. Gene Bicknell, who played George, the groundskeeper, gardener. A couple years after this movie, he ran for governor of Texas in 1986. And one thing that hurt his campaign is this movie.
Really?
Which, according to an article by UPI, this is what Bicknell had done. He had formed a limited partnership to receive a small percentage, about 1% to 2% of the movie's profits, as his salary. So he didn't get paid. He said, I'll take points. 1% to 2% of that $250,000 they made opening weekend. So I don't know. I mean...
Well, that's
profits.
You're not going to get that. You got to wait until the rest of the 2 million are paid through,
over 2 million for you to start getting 1% to 2%. Anyway, the partnership was called Playing with Fire Partner LMD, and the name of the film in which he appeared closely resembled the name of an X-rated film called Playing with Fire. And Bicknell was telling everybody, "Hey, there's no relationship," but reporters began to speculate. Which led to Bicknell to tell the Wichita Eagle. He said, "There's a lot of talk lately about the fact that I was in a light porno movie and all that stuff. Well, that's just not true."
A light porno. It was just at the tip of the porno.
Yeah.
Just
the
tip.
Just the tip.
Well, people were starting to call it softcore, so he says light porno. Which I like that as his interpretation of
Psycho. I love it.
Whether or not they're playing with fire was a catalyst, I don't know. But Bicknell did not make it out of the primary for governor.
Mm.
And he did run years later again and also did not get the governorship. But
see, I mean, based upon his charisma in this movie, you'd think he was a slam dunk.
You fool, your mother was going to change her will and leave her money to you.
You would have thought. You would have thought. You would have thought.
You would have thought.
You would have thought.
You would have thought.
I bet you're right.
Well, that is it. That is their play with fire. We hope you enjoy this episode. We hope you enjoy the rest of Sextember 3 Ménage à Trois.
My parents are so proud.
All right, we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description.
Hello, filthy movie lovers. My name is Gentry Austin.
And I'm Casey Scott.
And we're the hosts of the Sin Syndicate, film podcast for something weirdos, anti-criterion bros, and Joseph Sarno aficionados. Join us semi-weekly as we peer into the adults-only theaters and sticky-floored cinemas of the golden age of sexploitation, when the morals were loose, the laws were murky, and the intercourse was all simulated. Find us now on the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network.